So I'm going to be filling in his position. Maybe the first thing we can do is introductions. I know we have quite a few students tonight, and they might kind of like to know who we represent. And I can begin. My name is Mark Collier, and I represent Secretary of Scholars, Designers, and Operation Maintenance Specialists.
I'm Paul Childers. I represent the Restaurants of Southwest Washington.
I'm Bryce Hackett. I represent the Youth Voice in the county.
I'm Cindy Meyer. I thought we were going to go that way. I'm Cindy Meyer, Clark County Public Health, Chronic Disease Prevention.
Jeff Harbison, Chief Administrative Officer, Clark County Public Health.
I'm Lori Butler, sitting in for Chief Harbison. He's going to the City Council meeting today. He gave me a choice, come in and have dinner, which is really good, or go to the council meeting. Here I are.
My name is Benjamin Tabarenko, and students at the Village of Portland.
Savannah Powell, and I'm just a student. Tracy Wright, I'm from UP.
Matthew Volk, I'm also a nursing student at UP.
Paul Roberts, I'm from Peace Health.
Alan Melnick, I'm the Director of Health Officer of Clark County.
I'm Joan Cayley. I'm a community health nurse, but I'm actually on the council as the non-elected representative from the City of Vancouver.
I'm Tracy Root. I represent consumers.
I'm Joel Huffman, consumer.
Karen Evans, consumer.
I'm Stephanie Rice-Mashta. I'm a nurse, but I represent, and I represent nurses working in Clark County.
My name is Greg Nolk. I'm a physical therapist, and I represent consumers at Consumers Corner.
I'm Rhonda Turner. I represent Legacy Santa Creek Medical Center.
And I'm Julie Grimm, and I'm the support for the council and a Seahawks fan.
Don Strick with Public Health. I'm the Public Information Officer.
I'm Roxanne Wolf. I'm the Chief Operations Officer with Clark County Public Health.
Janice Koch, I'm the Chief Performance Officer with
Clark
County Public Health.
Thank you. The next item on the agenda is approval of the November 2014 meeting notes. We didn't have a meeting in December, but everybody could just look over the minutes very quickly and we see if they can get through.
So moved.
You have a second?
Second.
Everybody approval? For a minute. Thank you. The next item on the agenda is the executive committee. There are a slate of candidates. The nominations are Trevor Evers as chair, myself, Mark Collier, as vice chair, and Karen Evans as the member at large. And are there any other nominations at this time? I hear none, so if everybody feels comfortable, we can just vote on as for the group together. Everybody approving the nomination, say aye.
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 Opposed?
Congratulations.
Yes.
The next item on the agenda is the department update in Dr. Milnick.
So I'll start with influenza. So as you're all probably aware from reading stuff, influenza A activity is, influenza activity is elevated. It's basically 49 states now reporting regional widespread activity. We're entering well into the influenza season. The unfortunate thing about this, there's two unfortunate things about this influenza season. Number one is it's unlike previous seasons where the strain was H1N1. The strain this year is H3N2, and it tends to cause more severe disease than previous years. That's the first unfortunate thing. The second unfortunate thing about this year's flu season is that the vaccine is not a great match to the strain that's circulating, the predominant strain. So the CDC really recently put out some information basically on the effectiveness of this year's vaccine is about 23%. So that being said, every year the effectiveness ranges from around 10 to 60%, so we're at the lower end of the range. But also that being said, 23% is not zero. So if you're 23% less likely to get influenza because you've got the shot, that's a pretty good, it's not great, but it's better than anything else we have in terms of protecting ourselves. So we're still urging everybody to get the influenza vaccine. We're also, we've seen it in our community, including some influenza A and some long-term care facilities, and knowing full well that people in older age groups as well as the very young are more susceptible, it's even more reason for us all to be immunized. So that's influenza. Anybody have any questions?
Is there an age that is especially targeted, older adults and kids, but are we seeing deaths in any particular age range?
Well, we're always going to see more deaths in the very old than the very young. But, the vaccine is recommended for anybody over the age of 6 months. So. But I don't have any, I know there's a child in Washington died recently, and I can't remember the age of that particular child. Yes, 5, which would be more, susceptible.
Will they have a more efficient serum next year?
So we would hope so. So because the vaccine takes several months to make, there's not enough time to really develop a new vaccine this year. But hopefully, the CDC and the international partners and the pharmaceutical companies do the best they can in terms of observing what's going around the world and trying to match the vaccine pretty well. But like I said, it's it varies from year to year in terms of how effective it's going to be. So I would hope that next year we have a better match. Great questions. You guys are going to stump me. Ebola. So basically the Ebola problem in Western Africa is still a problem there, but fortunately it's no longer, Mali is now free of Ebola, and I think we're not even checking folks returning from Mali anymore because it's basically been Ebola free for I think at least 2 incubation periods now. Nigeria, it seems to be controlled, but Guinea and now I'm losing my mind, Sierra Leone are still in the throes of the of Ebola. So what we're doing is anybody returning from Ebola affected countries generally comes through 5 ports of entry in the U.S. and we're informed of anybody coming from Ebola affected countries, and we're monitoring them for the 21 days, which is the incubation period for Ebola. So we have, if anybody does develop symptoms, we are very fortunate that PCell Southwest is in one of a number of assessment hospitals in Washington that can actually assess and take care of folks up to 96 hours. Actually, just toured the PCell facilities this morning. I was very impressed. There's 2 Ebola treatment hospitals, in, if they're necessary, in the Seattle area. Harborview and Children's, I believe, are the 2. And I think there might be a 3rd one coming online. But we feel like we've been working really closely with our partners, and we feel like we're ready to respond. If anybody that we've been monitoring, and we have monitored a number of people who are returning from Ebola-affected countries. We want to encourage healthcare workers to go over there and care for Ebola-affected patients, because that's the best way we're going to be able to control this. We're not going to control, we don't need to control the outbreak here. We need to control it in West Africa where it's occurring. So so that's basically the latest update on that.
Again, I'd like to commend public health for working so closely with the city and with us so that we're notified when people are a person under monitoring, and Legacy has worked very closely with both us and with public health departments to be able to manage folks should questions arise. Of course, most of these people are going to be coming back during flu season, so they're much more likely to have flu than they are to have Ebola. have to be treated as though they had Ebola until we know otherwise.
I think we had a case of somebody who had malaria, which is also fairly common in folks coming back from that part of the world. By the way, Legacy has done an assessment hospital here, but as of, I think, January 22nd, Legacy, Good Samaritan, will have their assessment unit up and running. They've been doing some construction, kind of similar to what you guys have. It was really cool over at PCell Southwest because the old part of the old hospital that isn't used anymore has this great, the old ICU is a perfect, it's separated from the rest of the hospital, and it's like a really neat setup in terms of having an assessment unit. But Legacy, Good Sam is going to have a similar unit, so the Legacy folks, if necessary, can be transported over there. The other thing is that for folks coming back who don't have any place to stay, let's say they are in a high risk or some risk category, and their families don't really want them to stay with them, Washington State has some quarantine facilities where we can observe people as well if that's the case. But we haven't had to use that, and I don't anticipate that we will. Most of the people coming back are low risk, which means they were just coming back from an Ebola-affected country, but they haven't had any exposure. And then occasionally we have a some risk, which would be a healthcare worker who cared for Ebola patients, but was wearing the appropriate protective equipment the entire time. I doubt that we'll have any high-risk folks coming back or exposed here. So that's about all for the Ebola update.
What about the communication across the river? With Multnomah County, is it region-wide?
There is a they have a tri-county meeting that occurs every other week right now. It's much more frequent than that the first that started. We are participating in that with 4th County in the tri-county area. And the chief medical officers and other infectious disease people from all the hospitals in that area are meeting on a regular basis to make sure we're sharing appropriate information, we know who's in the country and who's in our area, any updates that might happen, those sorts of things. And, so yes, there is considerable communication across the river and with our own public health department also.
How do you actually get informed of somebody coming back?
So I don't know if we're notified by the CDC. I know we get the, I'm sorry that Monica isn't here, but we're basically told that, I think it is the CDC. I'm not sure it's through DOH, State Health Department, but anybody coming back, the feds notify us. They come to us by ports. So we will know them by name and where they are and have their contact information. So we get reports on anybody coming through from any of those countries. So it's worked up till now. And actually, some folks who are healthcare workers who are traveling there at work have told us before they go, which is really nice because we know when they're going and when they're coming back. But basically, we're notified. We have a list, and we do monitor them. And we've had several people over the last few months come through, and we've been monitoring them. We don't make, we don't go out and generally announce that, but everybody knows that public health departments across the country are doing this kind of work. That's all. So then I have one other thing on the agenda, the charter update. Yeah, that was going to be next, but I can go ahead and introduce Roxanne.
Right in between Ebola and...
You were first, and I didn't introduce him. I'm doing the list. So Roxanne has already basically introduced herself, but I just want to say a little bit about her. We are fortunate, and I think some folks from the Public Health Advisory Council were on the interview panels as well. So am I correct about that, or no?
I'm
not
sure.
Yes,
Sam.
There you go. There's a familiar
there
face.
How could I miss you?
He's not there.
So, so we're really fortunate to be able to find great candidate. Roxanne, in her previous life, first of all, she has a master's in health administration. In her previous life, was working as a health benefits administrator for four large
agricultural companies. Correct me if I'm
That's
wrong
correct.
About this in Southern
That's
California. In doing that work, and was very concerned about the employees, they're agricultural workers, and you can imagine agricultural workers actually have one of the highest risk, if not the highest risk occupation there is. Began to understand that the while she was really caring for the workers and worried about them, sometimes the companies themselves, that was not their primary interest. So she got the kind of public health bug around social justice and decided wanted to go into public health and is getting a master's in public health at Loma Linda. And we were fortunate to be able to get her here to be our chief operations officer. So we're pretty excited about that.
Well, thank you. I'm really excited to be here. So I appreciate the opportunity and look forward to meeting and working with all of you.
She's hit the ground running. So if anybody has any questions, I want to feel free.
Yeah, I guess you're going to have some comments on the county charter.
The voters this past election passed the county charter, which does a couple of things. One is the commissioners will no longer be called commissioners. They're called councilors. So it's now the county council. Another thing is that we're going to have five councilors instead of three commissioners, and the elections will be this November. So I think by January of 2016, correct me if I'm wrong, we'll have five councilors. Probably the biggest change, though, is in the past, the Board of Commissioners had both, those of you who are familiar with the separation of powers, you got the executive branch and the legislative branch and the judicial branch. The Board of County Commissioners actually did two of those things together. They had an executive function and a legislative function. So they could pass ordinances and do things like that. And they had the executive function, which is to be involved in operations. Well, the charter changed that. So basically, the Board of Counselors will have the executive function was put in the county administrator is now called the county manager. So the executive function is moved to the county manager. And the county council now has a legislative function, which is basically policy, including ordinances and all that other good stuff, as well as budget. But the operations piece, in terms of the day-to-day operations of the county, really reside with the county manager and the department heads. To give you an example of what that might mean is if we have a vacancy in our department and we want to fill it, in the past, we would have to fill out something called a vacancy review. And that would go to the board, and they have to approve that. We will no longer be doing vacancy reviews. As long as we're living within our budget, as long as it doesn't require a budgetary change, we can actually refill positions and make changes in terms of how our organization is structured without taking that to the Board of Commissioners. It would just be involved working through county administration. So that actually gives us a little bit more flexibility and the ability to do things a little bit more efficiently, I think. Well, that's my, my interpretation, but that's basically how it works. And then the board can actually concentrate on policy issues and budget issues. The other thing is, how does it change the Board of Health, which I love public health statute. The way it works, for those of you who ever want to read the public health statutes, is chapter 70 of the RCWs. And the WACs, the administrative code, is chapter 246. But basically says that when you have a county board of commissioners, they are the county board of health. There's other structures in the state of Washington. So there's some city, county health departments like CKing and Tacoma Pierce. Their board of health is made up of representatives from the city as well as the county. Then you have health districts like Spokane and Snohomish, where the board of health is not just county commissioners, but includes representatives from other entities within the county. Now that we're a board of counselors, you no longer have a board of commissioners. So if they wanted to, they could create a different kind of board of health. I don't think that's going to happen. I'm very happy with the Board of Health the way it exists now. But if they wanted to, they could appoint other people to create a different Board of Health if they wanted to do that. But I don't see that changing in the near future. So We'll go probably go from a Board of Health of 3 people. When we have 5 counselors, we'll go to a Board of Health of 5. The other advantage of having 5, by the way, is now when you meet with 2 commissioners, that has to be an open public meeting, so you can't get them talking to each other unless you have an open meeting. With 5, they'll be able to talk to 2 of them at a time. They'll be able to talk to each other without having, you know, do this big announcement and have a public meeting. So the communication between them will be a little bit easier. Anyway, I've been blabbering. I don't know if anybody has any questions about that.
I do. So yeah. on the current 3, or semi-current, however you want to phrase it, the 3 commissioner model, what was the executive, from the Board of Health, what was the executive insight in, or oversight into public health, and how will that change then once it goes to the 5 counselor? Is there any executive connection that's going to be lost therein, or is it still just kind of going to...
That's a really, really good question, because the Board of Health in statute has some roles and responsibilities, and that seemed like a more of an executive function. I don't think they're, the way the statutes were, that they do things like approve vacancies and stuff like that, but they still have the public health authority, and some of that is an executive function, like the authority around disease control, for example. They will still have that. There's a lot of stuff that's still being worked out in terms of what their exact role will be, but that's a really good question.
It would be interesting to see how that kind of works itself out over time.
Yeah, you know, the Board of Health, in terms of some of that authority, generally works through the health officer, which is in statute also, and they've been really good about, you know, working with the health officer, understanding that, you know, the public health department has that expertise around, for example, communicable disease control. So I don't see that really changing, but it's a really good question. And I'm not an attorney. I don't even think the attorneys have figured it all out yet. I think they're still figuring that out.
Sure.
Alvin, is there a likelihood, or is it where they might select just 3 of the 5 to be the Board of Health? Or, I mean, it's interesting to think about what, you know, with the public health law and with the charter, whether all 5 will be the Board of Health or whether they'll...
You know, I don't have the answer to that. I wish I did. I think it'll probably be the 5.
Five, yeah.
I think that will work out well. I don't know if anybody else can answer that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No, I'm not.
It's interesting. It's basically a new deal, and it's interesting. I don't think we've worked it all out yet. You know, the reason the Public Health Advisory Council was created, I think, or one of the reasons, was when we ceased being a district. When we were a Southwest Washington Health District, besides commissioners, there were a number of other people from the community who were on the Board of Health. Mm-hmm. And when that went away, the board realized they needed input from the community and from community members, and that's why this is created. Given that we have a very strong Public Health Advisory Council, I don't see a need for them to, you know, because you guys do advise the Board of Health. So I find it hard to believe that they've restructured, you know, their, you know, other, because they have you guys here doing all this work. But
I think what we as a group probably need to do is, whoever the 2 new members are, is to educate them on what our role is and maybe some things that we've done in the past to show our strengths.
Yeah, that's a really good idea, Mark. I think the more, you know, you guys have come and talked to the board before, but getting the Public Health Advisory Council, some of you in front of them. And I think they've come here before. We've even had some joint meetings with them. So maybe one of the things we need to think about is even inviting them and doing something. If that works out with you guys.
I think that's a good point, Mark. I think we need to plan it even before the election. You know, we haven't had a meeting.
Maybe kind of an orientation.
Yeah, especially now that once they get over the hump of, you know, what they're going to be, of actually planning a meeting with them this later this spring, you know, and sort of talking about the future of their role as the Board of Health and how we can help them.
And I think this board, ex-board of commissioners, they've been a really good Board of Health. And in many jurisdictions, you don't see that. Or in the past, you know, see it might be changing.
And you do have a new counselor on there also that could bring up.
Mm-hmm. What'd you say?
You do have a new counselor on there also.
Yeah.
And we don't know who's running for the 2 open seats, do we?
No.
Jeannie is, you know, I've met with her, and she's really interested in public health and what we do. She's interested in mental health as well, but she has strong interest in this. I think she'll be very much engaged with what's going on.
I guess my point is I think we need to do something this year. I don't think we need to wait until after. I think we'll need to do something after the election. But I think right now, with Jeannie being new on the board and with them becoming now board counselors, we should probably set a meeting time in May or June or something like that and sort of talk about how they see our role, supporting them in their new role as the board counselors.
It might be helpful, too, just to take a look, a quick survey at the other, six counties in our state that have switched models and just maybe touching base public health departments and finding out if there are any nuances that they could share with us or something along those lines.
I think we're the only county, I may be wrong about this, but we're the only county that's had a charter like this that created the councils. I mean, there's city county health departments, there's health districts, okay. And there's county boards of commissioners.
Just our situation, all things given, is kind of unique for the changes that have happened in the state.
Yeah, I think it is a little bit unique.
Okay.
So I don't think there's any other county that has county counselors. Just off the top of my head, I don't know if any of the rest of you know of any.
Oh.
It's a party.
The charter.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know,
there are
a couple
of Lockham County or Snowish.
Yeah, I think because the charter was unique, I think it, you know, we could ask.
Program.
I can look into it.
The next item on the agenda is an ACES update in planning. We didn't have a meeting in December, so a little refresher by Janice, I think, would be helpful. And she can talk about some other things happening in the community that would possibly involve the health department with the ACES program. And Cindy can further the discussion about how actions can be taken back to different organizations and other people involved with it. Janice?
Okay. So, first I want to give a quick update, as Mark said, on just a reminder where we've been, kind of get us all on the same page. Excuse me. Back in the fall, we began really the discussion about ACEs more intentionally. I mean, it had been discussed before, but last fall we really started to give that attention to it. We hosted an event at the library where Aaron Havig, is that how you pronounce me? Havig came and did some education about ACEs and its impact on the community. It was an open forum where lots of people could come. We had some community partners come and talk to us about the programs that they have to address ACEs. We had Debbie Hamm himself. We had Ann Johnston from Partnerships for
Neighborhoods.
And then we had Pat Shaw talking about the nurse family partnership, which we have here in the department. We also had Clay Mosier come and talk about some of the data, community data about ACEs. And then we also had Sheldon Levy, he's with the University of Washington?
Washington State.
Washington State. And he came and talked about some of the work and studies he's been involved in around ACEs. Then in September, we had our retreat, and we had Laura Porter come and do an all-day retreat with the Public Health Advisory Council. And she really, part of hers was educating us on ACEs, but also helping us think about how do we take what we've learned and apply it in our own work lives and with the Public Health Advisory Council. And really came up with helping us ground the information, because ACEs is such a huge, sort of overwhelming topic. And out of that retreat, we came up with four strategies, which was educate and engage, develop professional skills and abilities, assure preventive support for people affected by ACEs, and create a platform for systematic and continuous learning about what works for whom in what context. So those are the four strategies that came out of that September retreat. Then October, we really talked about the strategy some more and started a conversation about what the Public Health Advisory Council could do to really engage the community in addressing ACEs. And then, in November, We started the foundation for a logic model, and a lot of that information is in the minutes that Julie provided. We also began talking about the possibility of some funding from the Community Health Foundation. So part of that work was really to start the logic model. And so I brought copies of a draft. This is not exactly like what we had talked about, in that towards the end of the meeting, I thought there was this conversation of like, all this is really great, but we can't do all this. This is not fit in necessarily into the role of the Public Health Advisory Council. So I took the input from that group, and I sort of stepped back a stage and said, okay, how do I meld this with the logic model that the council already has, which it doesn't incorporate everything that we talked about. So what I wanted to do here just for a minute was look at this logic model, and you guys give me feedback about whether or not I've incorporated. Did I make enough copies? It doesn't look like it. Yeah. Okay,
are we going to make some more?
No, they said they would
share.
Yeah,
we'll share.
Who needs extra copies? Or a copy?
Anybody?
Down here? Okay.
You got it?
Okay. Thanks, Tom. So in this logic model, the first piece coming from the top going down, it seemed like what the conversation really was for the council was, how do we work together to make us a more ACES-informed community, understanding more about ACES and the impact on the community. And then the buckets or the components were really you could engage in education, in influence, and supporting activities. So under educate, there was host and participate in public forums addressing ACES, and share information with organizations and communities that FAC members represent. And that would be you guys taking this information back to your own workplaces and the communities, faith communities, whatever kind of communities that you associate with. Under influence would be writing letters to policymakers, including the Board of Health, supporting grant opportunities, which could be letters of support, or also identifying grant opportunities and letting us know. And then providing Clark County Public Health with community information about the influence of ACES. So that's when you come to these meetings, bringing your expertise and learning to this group. And then support would be meet with community partners and identify opportunities for alignment. And then participate and or support Clark County Public Health in the implementation of pilot program or programs. So looking at that, just that piece so far in terms of components activities, do you feel like that's a good reflection of the role that you guys might have in the activities that you might engage in? Is there something missing?
This seems a lot more manageable.
Excuse me, I would just like to say that I know that Chief Richardson has spoken on this to me several times, but the law enforcement education component is critical for our needs, mm-hmm. especially in the entry level, the basic academy, the basic training when the officers are really still refreshing them. Not old grouchy like me. Trying to absorb new concepts sometimes gets kind of hard. Like when you're young and impressionable, that's the time to get them. So
maybe expand that education piece.
Under education, where the law enforcement education block is more of an emphasis.
Yeah.
Because I know he's very passionate about it.
Yeah.
And I think we did have that, as we walked through our planning, at our meeting, so that, we talked about even the different target groups. Mm-hmm. This is where we need to, be very specific about the groups to target.
I think you guys are listed under stakeholders, but maybe make it more explicit up here. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah, I think under education, I'll expand that to talk about it's more than just educating, but it's actually looking for those opportunities to provide training and additional support above and beyond just giving information. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And maybe on the educated piece, also something in there about the prime targets of the education might be people who interact with trauma-affected folks and families, which would be not just law enforcement, but other, law enforcement would be one of them because they're interacting with, but maybe just a priority for target populations that need education, like law enforcement would be a major one.
Emergency rooms, you know, the housing shelters, you know, the
Excellent.
So would it be a benefit under the educational opportunity to give a very brief overview of the students about what ACEs is?
Where's Cindy? Cindy's our expert in
April. So in a nutshell, ACEs stands for Adverse Childhood Experiences. So Dr. Mellick, please correct me if I go off track.
You're going to do great.
So traumatic experiences that we have in early childhood, we've had them any time, but especially when they happen in early childhood, even they say prenatally, those, and Joan, you speak up because you're an educator on the subject, but at any rate, those kinds of experiences, such as having a parent incarcerated, observing domestic violence, having a parent who is drug addicted, being homeless, there's like 10 key indicators, but we could certainly expand that list and include more. So if you have more than five, it's been shown to correlate with a much greater incidence of chronic disease later in life or other problems that develop. Things like suicide, drug addiction, incarceration, all sorts of things have been closely correlated with the number of ACEs that you experience. What can make a difference in people's lives is if someone or something, like a community or even just one trusted person, provides resilience to that child as they're growing up. It can help to offset the impact of those ACEs. And then the second part of this that we've been finding out more recently is something they call neuroepigenetics, which is that if you're experiencing these ACEs, your body produces a high level of cortisol or stress hormones. And that constant bath of cortisol on your cellular structure can actually impact the structure itself and the genetic material that's handed down to next generations, up to three generations they found. So by helping to build that resilience and offset, mitigate ACEs in one child, you may be impacting health for three generations to come as well. So, do I leave anything else?
No, I'm happy. That's a good
summary. That might be the best summary.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
I've got a question over here.
So, when you're working with these cases, are you treating them like each age is different, or is it like a general overview of how to work with each?
That's a really good question, because I think that our focus on ACEs really needs to be cradle to grave, because not only is it the children that are impacted, but the people who have had that impact and now they're adults are more likely to be experiencing all of these mental health issues and mental disease issues. So you want them to be able to identify, yes, I was ACEs impacted, where do I go for services to help me to, you know, deal with these traumas or this health impact, and then also to help them not to replicate that with their own children, because they're much more likely to repeat.
And the other piece is about having trauma-informed law enforcement officers. Often the way we approach, let's say, juveniles who are getting in trouble with the law is to be really punitive with them, and that ends up recreating the trauma that they were exposed to as children. So a trauma-informed officer can learn techniques to deal with trauma-affected, you know, people who are subject to ACEs as a child, and learns techniques to be able to deal with them to get much more positive results. Am I saying that correctly?
Yes, I think that one of the things I've heard them say is instead of saying to a child or to an adult, what's wrong with you, you say what happened to you. You know, so I think we can take that lesson and apply it across the board to people that come into the ER or people who are homeless or children who are acting out in school or, you know, all kinds of situations. So we all become a little gentler and kinder group of people and, you know, help people out.
In the world of healthcare, if you and you'll see this when I talk about this in class, but Dr. Folletti, who was one of the principal investigators on the original ACEs study, talks about how this is changing the paradigm of healthcare. It makes it, it's public health's time. This is about prevention. It's about what can we do to prevent a lot of the things. And as our own Dr. Melnick has said, this is really a chronic disease prevention model, that if we think upstream and address these issues and help children and families develop resilience, we're preventing chronic disease, premature death, you know, aberrant behaviors, et cetera. So it's a lots going on in the world of healthcare about ACEs.
Is there like a tracking method to follow them, like longevity-wise, about their life afterwards, or anything like that?
Good question. Well, yeah, I don't know if Dr. Folletti's work has ever approached doing that at this point.
No.
So it was just to create that correlation.
The study was a, we can get into details, it was a case control study of looking at adults. I think something like 17,000 adults, a Kaiser system, and they looked at a variety of, they developed this ACE score based on these adverse childhood experiences and actually found a linear relationship between their, and these are adults including older adults, they found a linear relationship between their ACE score and things like obesity and diabetes and chronic disease, mental health, addictions, but a variety of chronic diseases. So nobody has done, the prospective study hasn't been done yet, and I think we have enough information from the case control study to really start working on this earlier on.
And it's been replicated
Yes. Time
and time again with the same, it's just, you can't write it off, you can't say it was just one study. It's pretty universal.
Okay, so looking at the stakeholders, I tried to write down all the stakeholders you guys listed. Is there any there that off the top of your head you're like, whoa, you're missing?
Yeah, one of them is the media. And I say that because I was contacted by the Columbian today, because earlier this year, last year, I gave a presentation at the Housing Authority on ACEs, and Scott Hewitt was there. And I'm just going to mention the study, but I'll mention it now. And so he actually wrote, if you recall earlier this year, a family blog about ACEs.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was based on his, he actually was attending a Housing Authority meeting when I gave a presentation. And so he called me and wanted to know about what I thought about the impact of the closure of, you know, the eviction of the folks from Courtyard Village relating it to ACEs. And so I talked in general about what ACEs were and, you know, the issues of poverty and hunger, et cetera. And he's very interested in this. And I think that we need to think about the media as one of our stakeholders to get this message out about the awareness of ACEs in our community and what we as a community can do to build resilience.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
So nice.
Any others?
Neighborhood Association.
Just as a little aside along that line, on February 23rd, they are going to have a meeting in Vancouver about the lack of affordable housing in the community. And I'm not sure what time it is, but I can get information. Vancouver City Council is going to have an affordable housing work session. And the Courtyard Village situation just continues. It is something that is a marathon. I attend the Methodist Church, and our minister has been very responsive in our community there. But he's, like he said, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. They continue evicting people. And this, so information from the council about that. Work session with the Vancouver City Council on February 23rd.
Mm-hmm. Is that the evening work session, the 4 p.m. work session?
Katina Inman with the Healthy Living Collaborative, she can give more information about that, or Andy Silver, the Council of Homeless. Anyway.
Civic leaders and elected officials.
Civic leaders and what did you say?
Elected officials.
Okay. Any others? Okay, so short-term outcomes in this model, how we've defined these, short-term outcomes are those outcomes that we have quite a bit of influence over. We can, it's never a one-to-one relationship, but these are the things that we feel like we can measure how well we're doing. Long-term outcomes are those things we're trying to influence, but there's so many other factors that impact it, we probably wouldn't be able to determine what our influence has been. So for short-term outcomes, we have increased community conversations about ACEs, increased alignment of community plans to address ACEs, and increased awareness about the impact of ACEs on the community. How does that feel? Is there anything missing? wording changes you might propose?
I like how that parallels, and that's what the first thing about ACEs is to be aware. So I like that that's a short-term outcome, increasing awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what people say is, I realize, you know, for individuals who become aware of this, then they say, why didn't I know about this earlier? You know, it could have changed my life course. And we heard that from Erin, too, when she talked about it.
Yeah.
Could you explain the difference between the first and the third?
Yes. So it seemed like the last Public Health Advisory Council meeting, there's a lot of conversations about we need to get information out, but we also need to get people talking about it. So it was really the first one I was trying to capture that idea of really even in the places where we work and what is our mission say, work, live, play, worship, that we're having those conversations, that we're talking to people about it. The other was more like working with the media, trying to get that broad stroke information out there so people have a better understanding of what it is. Does that seem just too much the same to you?
It seems that the third one is sort of an outcome of the first one to me, but if you think they're different.
I don't know. What do you guys think? I was trying to get it at different levels. Mm-hmm. I was trying to get it the intimate conversations versus the bigger educational opportunities. But
I think they're two separate things. I mean, you build with the conversations, and out of the conversations, then become aware of what are the impacts.
Okay.
I think the third outcome is really about impacts. The first one is about conversations.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So that could be maybe to emphasize it.
Well, and the middle one talks a lot about that collaboration, which is so important. So we talk about it, we get awareness, and then what are we going to do about it?
Yeah.
So the one in the middle really speaks to that.
Yeah. And then for the long-term outcome was decreased impact of ACEs on Clark County. And I wasn't sure on the wording of that. I was just...
I think that's short and perfect.
That's how I felt.
Would it be the impact of ACEs in Clark County? Clark County is not an entity.
So it would be the
impact on ACEs in the community, not on... on the citizens in Clark County or something like that, but it's not, I would say...
Within the community.
In Clark County. Yeah, rather than on.
Yeah, it seemed awkward to me. Thank you. So I'll make these changes. I mean, this is a draft. It's not going to be necessarily, our only guidance, but I think it'll be good to have as a reminder as we have these meetings, thinking about what we feel we can and cannot influence. And because I think with ACEs, it's going to be really easy to get down into some... like we did last time, saving the whole world at once, and that's not necessarily the role of the Public Health Advisory Council.
Well, it gives us a model for evaluation, too, and it would be useful if we do any kind of grant funding, at least from the council's perspective, in terms of what are the, you know, and how public health might go along with, you know, with this as well. So I think it positions us for, better positions us for funding, because we're building in an evaluation.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, so anything else on the logic model at this point?
Any questions?
I did have one question. For the short term on the community conversation, would that also include like resources post ACEs event or something like that? What families or the person that had that happen to them have resources to deal with the event?
And so that's the part that gets difficult to think about, because the Public Health Advisory Council, we don't actually deliver services. So it makes it a little bit harder, but I think that's a really good segue into the next conversation, because now we are going to talk a little bit more about what we might be able to do in the community to actually address ACEs. And so, some things have happened since the last meeting. Yay. So I was going to have, first thing is Cindy again, will give us an update. I think we mentioned at the end of the last meeting we might have an opportunity for a Community Health Foundation grant. And we had talked about the possibility of maybe doing a pilot project. And then Sandy had talked about the, oh, is it the AWARE grant? Is that what they're called? The AWARE grant that the ESD is doing. And so Cindy and I thought, let's talk to Bob Richardson, who is very interested in a trauma-informed police department in Battleground, and then talk to Sandy also to say, what is the AWARE grant? Make sure we're not duplicating effort. So, Cindy, do you want to give an update on that opportunity?
Sandy can help me out here a little bit, too. So we got together and talked a little bit about this. And, Sandy, in fact, Sandy, why don't you tell what the AWARE grant is about and what you're discussing?
So the AWARE grant is the Obama administration released gazillion dollars at the federal level, and states could apply for that money. There were, I think, 20 grants handed out. We worked on it last summer. The basic premise of the grant is to look at mental health services and increasing those, as well as reducing youth violence. So when we talk about mental health services, we talk about not only direct service provision, but access to services, et cetera. So in this grant, there are two components. One is, component one is about direct services in the buildings, and Battleground School District was a chosen, what's called an LEA, or a local education agency district, local district. And then component two is something called youth mental health first aid training. And it is a training that the president chose, and all 20 sites are providing youth mental health training. Folks, so think about CPR training. You're not a mental health professional, you don't learn all that, but you learn what to do if you're worried about a youth who has mental health issues, and then how to connect them up with services. So last summer I had the opportunity to go up and work with some colleagues in Olympia with our offices of the Superintendent of Public Instruction. We chose three districts to be involved in the grant. We had to pick three, that was what the requirement was. Battleground was chosen, Shelton School District, and then Marysville. That was before the shooting. So it is very interesting to be in, involved in a large federal initiative when one of the grantees at the local level has experienced just school shooting and deaths and that sort of thing. Okay. So anyway, so in Battleground, Battleground was chosen because they have a new superintendent. He actually worked with me in Cowlitz County on a five-year grant prior to this, and it was the exact same thing, only they repurposed it and called it Project AWARE. How am I doing? Anyway, so in Battleground, there's several initiatives happening within the grant. The biggest one is increasing mental health services to youth and families in the community. And then we're putting on a youth mental health first aid trainers, which is going to be in March. We're going to train 30 people from the community to be youth mental health first aid trainers. So,
will those trainers be in the area where, like Battleground and in Marysville, and those, or will they come from the outside community into those?
Great question. Part of, actually, I've answered it a little differently than I've told you before. So the Obama administration is a $10 million grant, about $2 million a year for 5 years. So they gave the money to our state, and they wanted it both to focus in these three school districts and then focus statewide. So we're going to actually do youth mental health first aid trainers in those three places, plus in six other places in the state we're going to train up people to do youth mental health first aid training. So there's a huge statewide initiative. In this community, there'll be three people from Battleground that are trained, and then every year for five, well, this will be the first year, so every year for 4 years following, we'll train three more trainers of trainers. Those people, in order to keep their national certification, have to do three trainings a year with 30 people in them. So somebody do the math, because it's overwhelming to me. But there's going to be an awful lot of people in the Battleground community who are trained in mental health, youth mental health first aid.
So it'll all be out at Battleground,
well,
not being in Clark.
We
Clark
have
County.
A broader definition of community than maybe other people do. And I'm one of the trainers. I had to go up and get trained, 5-day training, and it's
ridiculously long. And we're going to do our first youth mental health first aid training is next Tuesday. It's an 8-hour training. But I'll probably come back to this council at some point and say, okay, if you want to come get trained in youth mental health first aid, here's where the training is. And it probably will be somewhere in Battleground. But we're going to try to train as many people as possible before the 5 years are up.
So that's an amazing thing that's going on. And when we sat down together and talked with Bob Richardson at the police department, Sandy, this is going to be an incredible project. And one thing that we identified that we might be able to bring to the table also was to do some ACEs training, and because that was not part of the curriculum. Mm-hmm. So we said, what if we, public health brings in that option of training the teachers, and maybe looks at some in the police department, and maybe we talk to foster care, and we start doing some across-the-board ACEs training, and then even look at some other kinds of interventions where perhaps we can get more into the families at home than what this grant allows for, because your grant works more at the school.
I forgot a big piece of this. There's $100,000 worth of mental health direct services that are going to go into Battleground per year for the next 5 years. So we're going to drive out an RFP, and I'm probably sure how that's going to look, for $100,000 of mental health therapeutic services in the community. So almost always when you do trainings with people, the police and school and everyone, the big missing piece is, okay, now we know all these children need help and their families and so on. What do we do with them? Well, our answer in the grant is hopefully to have services that are distributed out. But we also have the layer of the RSN changing and the landscape of incredible change that's coming with mental health services. So anyway, it'll be interesting.
Yes. So that's what is going on in Battleground with the pilot, is that we're just working that out right now, and we're getting a proposal ready to provide to Community Foundation of Southwest Washington, and they're very interested in funding that work related to bringing ACEs into this picture and this mix, so that we can make sure not only are people mental health aware and oriented with the services, but also be thinking of it in terms of trauma-informed care and ACEs for the police officers and support.
Thank you, Cindy. Sure. So that proposal is due by the end of the month?
Right.
So it could be possible that we'll come back to you and ask for a letter of support from the Public Health Advisory Council to send in with our proposal.
I think we should. I recommend we do that. We have that ready to go. I mean, I think it's a no-brainer that we want to be a supporter of that.
Okay.
Would you agree?
Yeah, I do. So yeah. Draft something and then send it out to your approval?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, John.
Great. Thank you, John.
So the other thing that's happened since the last meeting is Joan has been saying over and over and over, we got to be working with the other people in our community that are doing this work. And we've talked about, is that a summit? Is it this? And really struggling with it, because we have done one thing. And I think sometimes at summits, we get a lot of people that already care about the topic. And is so we took Joan's advice and we said, well, let's get some of the organization or people representing organizations that are doing a lot of work around ACEs at the table, and let's start having that conversation. And so Joan and Cindy, do you want to share about what happened at the meeting we had last week?
Sure, I'll talk a little bit about the planning. So we initially started here with the early learning folks, because that seemed like a good place to start, and I think that's who you mentioned in the meeting too, was Self and Jody Ball from the SD 112, and Corinne, is that right?
Karina.
And Tamara Shoup and Debbie Hamm.
And Jan Weicker to be included.
That's right. And we met, talked, and I'll let Joan go on about that, but the outcome is that we're going to continue to work on a project that Joan will tell you about, and expand the number of partners who will be at the table. So take it away.
Well, and if you recall, last year we saw, June or July, you saw the trailers for the series that's coming up called The Raising of America. Do you all remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, well, it's coming. And so, again, in my involvement on the Housing Authority and on the Children Can't Wait with Self and here on the Public Health Council, it was driving me nuts, because we were talking about the same thing in all of the different places. So now I feel very comfortable because we're all talking together. So we met, and we decided at that meeting that it's a perfect opportunity. The Raising of America, when that's released, is really talking about
using that as a launch event in the community to work on ACEs and or the importance of early childhood, where you know a lot of ACEs is found. So we've decided, this group of people, which is going to be expanded to a little bit larger group, to collaborate on a launch event for the film Raising of America. We're not sure what that's going to be, but we talked about like the Kids or Liberty, you know, something you know, like that. And we would, you know, we haven't, I mean, this was just some getting together. We really haven't put together a plan, but on our next meeting, we'll be putting together a plan for that event. We've identified other partners to join us, the Family Resource Centers, you know, so other people that we want to have join us that are intimately involved in this work. And then we would launch this film, we would have a panel of community members, and then begin to talk about what would be the follow-up. So again, this is part, getting back to this model, that's perfect. We're increasing the community awareness about ACEs. And one of the important things about this is Debbie Hamm, again, if you look at the people that are involved and the contacts that they have, Debbie has been working with Temple Lens and High Five Media about some of the work that's going on at SELF and Children Can't Wait. And so, you know, this Hello Vancouver that's sort of the underground thing about Vancouver, but really involved. They're very interested in working with us. And so we're going to, you know, these ideas came up. And so at our next meeting, we're going to actually sort of put this together in a plan. And of course, our public health council will be like, you know, we are a player in this. And so I've been sort of representing us on this group. So that, you know, whatever we decide to do as a community, you know, our council will be a co-sponsor or whatever, help get the word out. And it really goes, as Janice has put this together, we're really increasing our community conversations about ACEs. And then as a result of this, you know, that we would decide then as a community, what do we want to do about it? And I think so many of us want to jump in and do something, but I think that, as Cindy says, as we used to say at Community Choices, listen, engage, mobilize. And first we need to listen. Once we get the information out to our community and whatever we put together, listen to the people that come, get them engaged, and then decide what is it that our community wants to do. And it won't just be the Public Health Council. It will be all these other entities that are actually working on this right now. ESD, you know, SELF, Housing Authority, that already have activities that are in motion that we can, you know, that there's a lot of synergy here. And what's going on in these groups really resonates with each other. So it's, you know, as we said, this is a situation where the sum becomes way greater than the whole of the parts. So
hopefully some of the folks that are involved in this stakeholder group putting this launch event together will want to take ownership of having some of that follow-on training or workshop or whatever is identified out of
because
that.
We can't do this all. You know, we've got to take it to a bigger group. Well, Ann is there too, Ann Johnson from our own health account, from the Partnership for Health and Neighborhood and what's going on in Rose Valley Agenda. So look forward to something in April. You know, that's the month of the young child and
public health
week. It's sort of, you know, that would be the kind of
its month.
So once Cindy gets our, you know, we're doing a doodle poll as to our next meeting. If anybody's interested in joining me on this work group, please let me know. I don't like to be the, you know, not the expert by any means, but I'm trying to take everything we've done here into this other group. So
it's a very exciting, interesting conversation. Very energizing. I think the group's going to do some great work. One of the things they talked about is the cafes. What are they called?
Mm-hmm. World Cafes. Yeah, the community cafe. Mm-hmm. And perhaps do views of, there are six sub films that come under the resilience. It's called Raising of America. Uh-huh. And they deal with different topics. And so having different partners host those in various portions of the community. So
we will be bringing the information about what the group's doing back to the council.
So we talked a lot about how can we use social media as well, you know, and so I think it was a good meeting, and I think everybody wants to come back.
Yeah. I think it's a first step toward creating a common vocabulary among a lot of the community. There's certainly been, and I want to kind of tip my hat to all the work that's been done in this area by our frontline partners, because they've really worked on creating awareness around this in the past as well. So just sort of reigniting that, and then, you know, just getting more people brought to the table again. And
get the conversation restarted. So, a little bit of history. Paul, you'll remember this. When the council first started, Paul and Mark and I are original members of the council. Sandy. When Kate Coons was here and tried, you know, we had to work on Freedom 3, what they did in San Mateo County, California, and we were trying to get going on this. So it's I think it's really, our community is ready for this right now to move it and make something happen.
Yeah.
So that's been how many years now? Julie, 13 years? 12 years?
Well, thank you, John, for nudging us on this, because I think this is going to be a good group to have. And then Cindy again.
Sure, nice.
The ace is queen. I don't know if that means you have a lot of aces or a lot of information. Just gonna have her give us a quick update on some funding she has through the MCH, which is the Maternal Child Health Grant. So we can use some of that for some of these efforts that are going forward.
So we have received the Maternal Child Health Block Grant for before my time, but in the since I've been here anyway, there's been one of the areas that we chose to focus on is ACEs, and so we have four deliverables or initiatives that we're working on with that grant funding that overlaps with all of this. So it's really nice because we can take some of our staff work to help carry out what this council comes up with, this thing that they want to do. So I just like to briefly share what some of those are. For example, one of them is that we committed to training at least a public health employee and to work with others on training experts on ACEs, and then to provide that training to other key partners. So as we mentioned earlier, there are key partners out there in the community, other groups that interact with children or families. So we'll start to bring them up to speed on ACEs and create that common vocabulary and awareness. We're also going to be training our community health worker pilots that work in the Rose Village area about ACEs, and we're going to become a trauma-informed organization ourselves in public health, so we'll be providing that training this spring. We're also working with our school partners, and we've already started accomplishing that deliverable, to explore school-based models for what is done around ACEs in other communities. Spokane is particularly a leader in that area, so we're looking more closely at what they're doing. And then the third thing we said we would do is to perform a community-wide assessment of what is going on with coalitions, efforts, opportunities to provide more ACEs education or connect people with ACEs information or services to those who have ACEs. Maybe even an ACEs little test you can take and see what's your score, and then what do you do if you've got a 10. One possibility is that we'll want to talk about either with our ACEs group or maybe with this group is where would we present and where would we share that information when we start to collect it. And as you all become aware of things, we'd love it if you filter that information back to us as well so we can start compiling all of that. So maybe we want to create a website or something like that to share that sort of information. And then the last thing that we do to help with ACEs is to engage the faith-based community. So I think you've all heard about our faith-based coffee group. And we have one here in Vancouver that's been going for a couple of years. It's been very successful in bringing local faith communities together with schools. And now a second one is just starting over in the Evergreen School District as of this month. So we see that as a real way of fostering resilience and bringing resources together to support kids and families. So that's our fourth thing that we're doing to work on this. So I think it kind of all fits together.
When is the one out of Evergreen? Pardon me again? When is the meeting out of Evergreen?
Oh, gosh. There was the first initial meeting was about a week ago. And you know what? Maybe we can send that out in the minutes because I don't know it off the top of my head when the second meeting is. But it's coming up soon. So in February, I believe. I'll be happy to get that.
So I feel like we've been doing a lot of talking at you. Do you guys have ideas, suggestions, pieces we're missing, things you know that's going on in the community you think we should be aware of, other ideas on how we might be able to engage the council in some of this work?
Yeah, I've talked to some of the shelter providers, Sharon in particular, and a lot of their case managers have been trained in trauma-informed counseling, so they've done that part, but they have... they operate most of the family shelters or two-family shelters.
That's a great idea.
So, and I'm going to have lunch with Amy, who's the program director, and hope to kind of fill her in more about what's going on and how. So I don't know if we want to go as far as to I don't think we want to evaluate what people are doing, but I don't know if we want to make recommendations about, you know, if they're already being trained in trauma-informed case management. I mean, is that what we'd like them to do? Is that, I mean, that's part of ACEs, but do we want them to take that next step and do that evaluation? So that's something we might want to think about. And I talked with Debbie Dover with Second Step Housing, and they have had ACEs components in some of their parenting classes. And
cool.
So I don't know exactly what that looks like, and it didn't sound like they were still doing it, but they have done that. So that might be another area that maybe some agencies are touching on, if with either the case management and or parenting program, because most of the shelter providers have some type of parenting program that they provide. So those are just a couple of ideas.
You know, even for part of the getting the word out, one of the things that I've been contemplating with the Neighborhood Alliance is that there's online, say like Facebook, there's numbers of groups or pages like Neighbors Helping Neighbors that are run and administered locally that reach out and touch lots and lots of people. So perhaps, you know, down the road, one of the ways that we could look at helping just to begin to reach, you know, into the public, getting the word out is trying to identify some of those groups and then reaching out to the administrator owners of them. Or maybe it could just be as simple as posting on there, you know, short little PSA type messages, you know, and maybe with some follow-up, some message, and then if this resonates with you, call this number, you know, whatever, however that looks, but using those Facebook sites or other similar social media just to kind of as a public campaign to help get the word out. So
yeah.
Something to think about and explore down the road as well.
Yeah, because I think one of the things I've been thinking about is how do we get the information out, because it's really kind of complicated. Mm-hmm. And how do you talk about it in a way that can catch someone's attention, that's going to engage them, that has enough information and not just scary? Because, I mean, I think it's a little scary if people think, well, I have really high ACE score. I know, so, like, you know, are they
I messed up, yay, you know.
Yeah. So I think that's a really good idea. And spend some time thinking about our messaging and how we might do that.
Yeah. What about the WIC program? You know, in terms of using the program's moving now, right?
I think they're officially moved today. Maybe.
Yeah. But, you know, you just think about that's targeting moms and young kids and making sure that we're getting that information to what's important to those families with those kids mm-hmm. that are getting, with moms and kids that are getting that nutrition support. I mean, it just seems a natural occurring mm-hmm. connection there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Right. Probably the food bank.
Yeah,
a food bank
also, along with that.
Yeah.
Well, your juvenile departments and your CPS departments and stuff are probably your right target also.
Mm-hmm. Or even for that matter, the APS as well. You know, it's kind of the other end of the spectrum, but nonetheless, there's still fallout mm-hmm. in those age groups, you know, older adults.
Mm-hmm.
You can still try to, you know, have resources there for older folks that are still dealing with it.
Mm-hmm. You know, you just think about what we know from the research so far about resilience is that single, that caring adult enough. And mm-hmm. so I begin to think about the future. You know, if we see a child or a young person that, you know, seems lost, how can we connect that person with a mentor, you know, with mm-hmm. a I mean, I could see that's really an action-oriented thing that, you know, that might occur as a result of this. And I think a lot of that, our teachers are doing a lot of that, you know, and it's you know, in addition to being working hard and not being well-paid, teachers also take on this role of mentors for some of our kids who are really struggling. So if we could create a model that would support those teachers so that they could, because they're the ones that often are the first to identify a kid who's becomes really important. And I just think about the burden that is for, you know, the teachers to also be that caring adult for sometimes children. They may be the only really caring adult that a child has. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think, too, I know Bob Richardson has been very... have been very outgoing about their interest in ACEs and the importance of law enforcement, but I think it'd be good too for the hospitals to think about and help us better understand how we might be able to get some of this information to providers or
so I think that having a consistent packet of information, I think having your key point presentation outlined and have just consistent packet of information that we could share.
With providers, or are you thinking patients?
Yeah, our emergency department team, for sure. I'm wondering about urgent cares in our communities, too.
One thought it might be to keep in mind who are key people in your organizations or in your contact circle that could be invited to that launch event. We're not going to be hitting everybody, and we're not going to hit that launch event. It's not going to hit the people who are maybe going to be doing the work down with the individuals necessarily. Maybe they will, but you might be hitting more of the leadership in the community. Mm-hmm. But it'll start the waves, you know. Mm-hmm. And so maybe think a little bit about who might be invited.
So you assume that corrections is also involved? Prison, the jail?
Yes, they're very
interested. I assume that's under law enforcement, but
specifically.
I have corrections
in it. And juvenile, okay, and juvenile down there as well.
Yeah, and also judges. Judges, I think that came out of one of our groups at Children Can't Wait when we did our previous. Judges are really an important position. You know, the judges and what are the other people that are not judges?
Arbitrators?
Huh?
Mediators?
Yeah. Well, the
actually,
the fill-in judges, the ones
that cost the representatives.
Yeah.
But
I think those groups are, you know, that because they so often make the decisions that impact the family in terms of what goes on with.
Prosecuting attorney's office.
The judges already are kind of heavily into ACEs and kind of redoing the thinking about the juvenile department locally in Clark County.
Right.
They've had meetings on specifically on ACEs.
So maybe they'd be a good person to have on a panel discussion.
That would be very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Panel is if we can identify people who've already internalized some of this and are applying it to their work to share that.
Right, because after the showing the ideas, there's a panel, right?
Yeah.
And then people can ask questions and kind of have that conversation right after the showing.
The nice thing about Raising America, it comes with a whole list of the questions. It tells you everything. It's really packaged for you, so it just lays it out. You just pretty much schedule the place, and they tell you how to do the whole shebang, so it's kind of nice.
So, do we need to do anything else with ACEs at this point? I'm kind of feeling like we've talked it out, and we'll be bringing it back to other meetings. So what I'm going to propose, is okay, Mark? As we go on to talking about the calendar. It all fits together so well. So one of the things that, you know, happens with the Public Health Advisory Council, one of the roles of the executive committee is that they meet, like, I don't know, a week or two before the meeting and say, you know, what do we want to make sure we cover at the meeting? But one of the tools that leadership team here at Public Health has used is really thinking about over the years strategically, what is it we really want to make sure we talk about? And so I have another copy, which I don't have enough of. And this is just a draft sort of calendar. So we already brainstormed some things we know we are going to be wanting to bring to the Public Health Advisory Council over the next year. We know we're going to be talking to the Board of Health about including e-cigarettes in the SIP or the smoking in public places law. So that's something we'd want to bring here before we bring to the Board of Health. We know from talking to some of our staff that
we're getting to a crisis point around healthcare access in our community. Is that something we want to bring here and get some input from the Public Health Advisory Council? As you all, not all of you know, but some of you know, we worked on a health element that really was about looking at health in planning policies and development of the community. That's something we want to revisit with the council. So we also know we're going to be getting into a strategic planning process. That's something we're going to want to bring here. The other thing, a quality council. As part of our accreditation efforts, we have to have a quality council. We're talking about using this council for that purpose. So quarterly, we would share data with you about what's happening in our department, and you might give us input about areas we need to look at, perhaps some quality improvement efforts you might suggest. I don't know exactly what it's going to look like. We're still working on that, but we'll bring that proposal to you.
Chance, have we talked to the council about accreditation? Or would be?
Yes, and we'll be.
We did. You guys don't.
It probably needs to be on this calendar. Yes, it is in March.
Yeah. So we've talked a little bit about it.
Yes.
But we'll talk more about this is national accreditation that we would like to go for. You'll have a role in this as a quality council, if you agree.
So you can see how this is organized. We have key events. And in April, we have the launch Raising of Merrick. That's a key event. Then under the next section, we have key topics or issues that we would like to bring to this council. Then we have regular topic items that might come up, like the Quality Council. Topics that need following up, so we could populate this as we go. Like, let's say tonight you say, gee, I think we really need to follow up on that interesting thing Jana said, and we'll put that in May, something like that. And then at the bottom are topics for BOH. So that's going to be to help us track what topics we have here that we also need to talk to BOH about, and that will help you guys know like where you might want to use your influence or support for those issues. But one of the things we realized as we started populating this is that we in public health look at everything through a public health lens, and sometimes, especially after we've been here a while, get more and more focused on those sort of public health issues. So what I'm going to ask you guys to do tonight, don't groan, but I want to break into small groups again. And what I really want you guys to do, and we'll give you about 10 minutes, is talk about what issues, what two or three issues do you see that are coming up on the horizon that you think should be something public health should pay attention to, and things that you think we should bring to the Public Health Advisory Council. Because you guys are our eyes and ears of, you know, I guess the normal world that we no longer live in. So that would be helpful to us. And then what we can do is look at our calendar and talk about when strategically it makes sense to put these things in here. And I think Stephanie has brought some topics before, like the oil trends, right, or the oil and the coal trends. So those kinds of things that maybe aren't necessarily on our radar right now, we want to make sure we get the council engaged and involved, because it can't all come from just the executive committee and us. We want them to have everybody's input. So if you guys could get into some small groups, whatever fits with where you're sitting, I'm not going to ask you to get up and move around a lot, but like maybe these four or five people here, you guys in the corner here, and then around here. And take 10 minutes to just come up and agree on two to three topics that you see as being issues in our community that we should consider with a public health lens. Does that make sense? Yay! Thank you.
Well, who's an arbiter? Who's an arbiter? Public health people.
Just the one of us
as well, or do you just want to be UNR?
Yeah.
You finally did it.
It's warm.
Oh, I
haven't
heard
of
it. Some community that have things in the water.
Sorry to get to you first.
I thought you might have a little. Okay.
Well, you're new enough that you probably can identify issues. Well, but you're new to the community, so maybe we need some. This girl is in our group. Janice?
Yes. We're working on our team.
Oh. We can go through the exercise.
Yeah, because when I thought it was on our lips,
they're not even aware of what we're doing.
That's a great idea. Yeah, I think we've given them some. It's like, oh, what are some other things?
I think you should sometimes talk about balancing public or individual rights versus public policy.
Oh, that's ethics.
Hmm? I know it's ethics. I think they should talk about it.
Our ethics committee. That might be interesting.
Well, and I think one of the very first what you should be applying to is the vaping law.
And you know, I think it would be really interesting not to just stand there and fix it, but take out
your clothes and get old clothes. Well, that's the ethics training.
Well, yeah, that's where all the hours.
You have to sign them all.
But I think that I thought we need to look out through everything on the TV one.
Yeah. He's a trainer.
I can do it blindfolded now.
I think it's interesting, and I think it's interesting for people. It helps them to think through some of these issues and not just get, like I do, immediately emotional and explode. Hmm? No, your book? Of course I did.
You act now.
You know what? No, that's
why I was just saying. Ethics and your locks on.
It can help you go to sleep.
I mean, and then public health.
The other thing is if you need a door stop. It's a very good door stop.
Yeah.
How important that is.
Okay,
But important is for us to understand these surveillance, something that might be of interest to them as a core public health function. How do you know, communal disease, you know, and then what happens when we have an outbreak and how we deal with it. I mean, that may or may not be appropriate.
Oh, you mean the public health and action idea that I had?
Oh, hey. Great minds, I am just saying.
That went away, I guess.
So what is the goal objective of this discussion again? To get stuff to bring to the Board of Health? Or?
Just to make sure we
Pretty basic level.
It's public health and
I'm
We haven't talked to them about some of the controversial stuff, the stuff that people end up complaining to the Board of Health about, like the wineries and all that, you know, the customer complaints and all that.
So I guess that's what you said about, we bring something to the public health administration. What are we going to do with this?
Well, ultimately, it's to advocate for public health, especially in the board, to advise the board.
And I guess my feeling is always
Well, we might want to give them the foundational public health services. I don't know.
Well, I think going in the strategic planning process is going to be what gives them all the facets of what we do.
We keep people from eating.
Signed up contract.
That's where we go.
That should be a lot of
walking. Meeting shit to put up on.
Talk about a brand new one. But they have not supported this.
Yeah. What's it, I guess? Everything you should have known was our culture was by 5 years old.
If it's wet, it's not
Communicable disease growth says it all. Okay, so we need to do what you guys are suggesting, what Julie is suggesting is at each public health advisory council, we have a short public health discussion.
I think you should just take whatever you did, you know, maybe if it works out time wise that you did it the month before.
This
would
be the best rehearsal for the presentation to the board. We're always scrambling. Yeah.
How that's impacted someone's life.
We have really good stories. Like, those are talk about Shigella and Kleinlein.
About two more minutes.
Well, we have. People did
I think you make a good point because I mentioned the stories that were counselors here. And we had a recently presenting on a case that she was involved in going with the asthma. I mean, the counselors are just totally engaged. Because it's a story.
Well, sometimes it's simply just having a food inspector stand up and say, here's what we do. And they shoot their little gun off toward the wall and show you how that they can tell what temperature the food is. And just simple displays of stuff like that, of gadgets, kind of give people an idea. idea about what they do in a restaurant and what's important to them. And Ed Martin one time got up in front of this, I asked him, can you talk about what it's like to do an inspection to the students, the place they spoon? She had me horrified. I couldn't even eat meat.
That's what we want. We want horrified people. This should be our goal, right?
Well, she literally was very blunt about how, you know, a cow is butchered and how it is that you have the cross contamination and the fecal part with the bird.
And she gets on the hide and the hide is taken off and she gets on the meat.
Well, she was just trying to, she started out by saying, you know those yummy, yummy hamburgers you all love to eat? Before it was all over, I thought, oh, this is horrible. But actually, it was very interesting, and she really was very, very forthcoming with what did you do to that meat and how it is, how important it is for the people to be trained.
Absolutely.
They pretended they were Aussie and Harriet or something like that. And then they would like keep going out cooking and food and chopping on a deal.
Thank you,
and
got it.
It was hilarious.
Water safety, childhood.
Okay, so I think I started over here last time, so I'll start over in this corner over here this time. So, consumer corner.
We're just finalizing our details here, but we're
ready. Oh, are you ready?
No, we're ready. Okay. Oh, wow.
So you want the bullet point?
Yes.
Just down and dirty. We discussed water contamination / water safety. Water safety? Water contamination.
Okay.
We discussed childhood obesity and activity levels. We discussed the nuances of recreational pot use.
Hmm.
And the need for some education around marijuana.
Not how to recreationally. There was one more. Creating non-emergent response structures within our EMS system.
What?
This is a good one. Yeah, you should probably explain.
What was that again?
Creating non-emergent, am I saying this right? Non-emergent response structures within our EMS system.
No, that makes sense.
Alternate responses for non-emergent calls.
Yes.
Right.
Within which system?
EMS.
EMS.
I think you guys were trying to just do something long so I could crash into the table. Okay. Didn't exactly follow the rules, but you're close.
Oh, there's rules?
It was 2-3.
2-4.
2-3, 2-4. Right in the ballpark. Thank you, guys.
We have 3.
Huh?
We have 3.
Oh, you followed the rules.
Yeah. One of the things is following up on what Sammy said earlier, what's the, you know, the issue of affordable housing? What's going on with that in our community? Access, it's something that's been on our agenda for years, and we alluded to it with the aware back, but the access to mental health and substance use disorder treatment, huge issue that we've really not been on our agenda for 10 years, 12 years. And the third one we talked a lot about is what is the profile of our community related to health disparities and population demographics?
Could you say that one more time?
The profile of our county in terms of population demographics, you know, racial, ethnic, we know there's a lack of interpreters in many services and et cetera, but also the whole issue of health disparities, to know what, you know, to find out, you know, we're not white middle class people in Clark County anymore. We have a very, you know, we were talking about the apostolic community that deals with, it's almost like a gang, you know, the silo. And so what does our community look like so that we could do better planning?
Excellent.
Those are okay.
Great, thank you.
Is it okay?
It seems shorter when we were talking.
Hey, back in this corner.
We talked primarily about the marijuana issue, the legalization of marijuana, how that's impacted the community.
So really beyond just the recreational or education, but just marijuana use in general?
It impacts at several levels. It impacts at the adult level where it is recreational. It also impacts what we're seeing is we're getting more and more calls for juveniles under the influence who are trying to overdoses, those types of things. So I think that's what we didn't have. I think when that, in July, when 1 year has gone by, that this is gone and they start doing the studies, this has just been talking from my experience with all of them. I think you're going to see the numbers of juvenile problems off the charts. So I think that's going to be something that the community is going to be looking at.
It actually ties into the e-cigarette issue as well.
We talked about that.
THC. You could actually put the THC in the e-cigarette so you don't, it doesn't smell like anything. And we've probably heard about that.
It doesn't smell bad?
So it's not just recreational, it's juvenile adults.
They put it in here, they have that flavor. It smells like a cigar.
Just that word. These guys are not quite done. Go ahead.
So the other aspect of that was right under the influence.
Yeah.
Not only influence. Alcohol, but marijuana, and how the resources and the testing process for us to enforce that is quite the challenge.
They're called juju drugs. The term
candy.
THC and a vaping device, a new kind of joint.
I know that they've got, we went into the marijuana shop that's on Main Street that sells it legally, and the chief and I went in uniform and introduced ourselves to the owner just to get to know him. It was funny to watch the reaction of the people walking around.
Sure.
Standing inside the uniform, and they would come in and stop. We're going, no, it's okay.
We're just taking your picture.
We're just getting ours.
We're going to turn around right now and we're going to chase, but.
Okay, anything else from that group?
That's
great. Okay, this group in this corner, Bryce, I hear you've got stuff with the...
Alrighty, a lot of the topics that we talked about have kind of already been discussed a little bit, so just some slight modifications to some of the topics already discussed. First off was the childhood obesity problem, and we talked more about the dietary side of it, and more specifically, the high sugar, specifically fructose contents.
The studies that are being done now, high fructose corn syrup, it's deadly. It's literally deadly.
And it's in everything.
It's in everything.
It really is.
Including those cereal bars, whatever it is.
Yeah. Okay. Another one of the issues already touched on by John was the diversity and the ethnic kind of health disparity present in the country. And kind of going along with that, some of the health issues and disparities between immigrant and refugee populations within the county. Third one, again, was also the use of marijuana, and that was just talked about because as a high school student, you see it from an interesting perspective all the time, and it is a problem amongst juveniles, for sure, and it's getting worse as time goes on. Another aspect that we talked about was immunizations, specifically for older individuals, ones we're talking about with the shingles vaccines. And
that was kind of interesting because I go for my annual flu shot. Then I was introduced to pneumonia shot. And this past year, shingles shot. So it's always something new every year. There's a new immunization.
Single malt shot.
This one has been around for a little while. It's just that you got to the age.
I'm just going to say, is it only
for I've gotten there too.
Everybody gets a chance.
You know, I don't know, Janet, if, or
Janice,
if people would be interested, but speaking of Marnie, you know, our previous person, I just talked with her today. But she also sent, I don't know if you got this, Stephanie, but she sent a document to a lot of us nursing faculty about the 20-year summary of research on marijuana that they're using in Washington County. And it just goes along with that. I have that document. It's a summary of 20 years of research on the health effects of marijuana and what Washington County is doing related, you know, with what's going on in Oregon. I can send those. I can send them to Julie and send it out. It's very interesting reading based by...
Is that the report that Kim Rupp put together?
Yeah, it's a report, you know, yeah, that she sent out and wanted us to share it as widely as possible because a lot of work went into that and then what Washington County is
doing. Send it to Julie just to make sure it's the same thing.
And if it would be... I've already sent it to my students, so you've already got it. Email today, so.
Yeah, Mark.
Betsy had one I thought was interesting about animal disease. Or
yeah, there's a Mark should have been for an animal disease training here, I think, so as far as I know. I went to one up in Olympia, and it brings together veterinarians, first responders, police, fire, anyone who might be involved during an outbreak of a foreign animal disease, and emergency planning, a lot going into it, and kind of talking about whose roles would be what and what's missing and, you know, do you know what the state does? Do we know what federal roles are?
Yeah, they actually had an exercise. I know that our emergency management department is involved in an exercise.
It's mid-March something?
I think in March right
now. Okay.
Did I get it right? It's foreign animal
disease? It's called foreign animal disease, but basically foot mouth disease, high-path avian influenza, which Washington is having an outbreak of right now. Things that come over, and some of those things will affect just animals, but some things are zoonotic and can affect humans as well. So
when they say foreign animals, foreign?
Yeah.
Foreign animals.
It's more of a disease
no
that
tigers
isn't necessarily found in the U.S. It's not native to the U.S. disease. So it'd be if anyone's interested, I'm sure I can get the info to Julia. We can get the dates out.
Betsy, that's really interesting because that was one of the first things we talked about early in the days of the council was the zoonotic diseases and the you know, about 12 years ago, remember the prions and that's what that is. But I mean that was, you know, our vet at that time spent, you know, because we were new and so we spent a lot of time.
Yeah, we had a person who was a veterinarian here who was very much into that, particularly with the what is it, mad cow.
Yeah.
Because at that time, you know, anything that had anything to do with the brain or any other the organs of the cow, they were almost, you couldn't put them on the menus anymore.
Yeah, we've dealt with zoonotic disease here. We had an outbreak of avian chlamydiosis, which is psittacosis in people a few years ago. You may, if you were around then, but yeah, we deal with it. Ebola is actually a zoonotic disease. Yeah.
Right.
So there are lots of things that you wouldn't think of or zoom out.
It was really interesting. I went up to Olympia. It's a very similar thing that they're going to be doing here, hopefully. But they brought together county health departments, lots of different people who maybe don't know as much about the veterinary side of it. And we sat at tables and discussed, you know, what our role would be, what your role would be, and what questions we have and how that overlaps. So if you're interested, that's in March, I believe.
So I put maybe it might be a conversation for April, sort of like a follow-up to that. So this group in the corner, which is all public health, we also came up with some. And we came up with naloxone, what we're doing around naloxone.
We're out front on naloxone compared to the rest of the state.
But we're not going to talk about it right now.
Right, okay.
Public health ethics and public health in action. So every month we take a public health in action story to the Board of Health, and we're talking about, is that something we'd want to start bringing to the council? So what I'm going to propose is I take these topics, work with leadership team, the executive committee, start plugging them into the calendar, understanding that things change, right? I mean, something could come up. You know, we may have planned to talk about this in November, and then something comes up where you know we got to talk about it in June or whatever. But to make sure that we're cognitive of all the things that we, or maybe something drops off.
But I think this has really been helpful and interesting to me because, like, the marijuana use, when we were brainstorming things, that's so huge. And I just realized we didn't even come up with that one. So I think this has been really helpful. And it's also a good reminder there's certain things we don't want to have fall off that we have talked about before, but we really still need to discuss. So
the marijuana is going to be sooner rather than later, though, as well, because the e-cigarette discussion that we're going to have is going to include marijuana. Just a heads up, that is going
to
come up.
And it seems like there might be more than one component also to that. There is the SIP law, but there's also some of this other things that are taking place, and we might want to break it up into two parts or something. And we will continue to bring ACEs back. So I will bring the calendar back next month, and you guys can give some feedback, and we have 10 more minutes, so thank you so much for your brain energy.
The last item on the agenda is public comment. We don't have any public here, but anybody else has any other topics or ideas, or if students have any input, we appreciate it.
I had no idea that there was actually a model or anything for it, and what we're putting up.
No matter what you go into in nursing, you'll be dealing with that. So.
Thanks so much for having us.
If there's no other comments, we're adjourned.
Thank you.
Julie, did you give these microphones to you?
You can erase those. Good job. Oh, you are. Cecilia's the wizard. Blues? Are you going to start So where do you take off?
We're going to fly in St. John's and
we got it back up to Yard and Garden is the,
yes.
Yeah, well, their family.